Livewire with Jeff Dorset.
So it's a great pleasure to bring on a friend of the show, Robin Campbell from UB40, formed in 1978. Would you believe 50 UK hits and rising? Only 100 million albums, Robin. Not too shabby.
Not bad, is it? How are you, Jeff?
All right, very good. But what a success story it's been for you guys.
Yeah, it's still pinch myself on a daily basis, really.
Yes. And if you go back all the way to mid-78, and I don't know whether the first gig you did at the Hare and Hounds in King's Heath, can you remember how many people were there?
No, it was a private birthday party. It wasn't actually, I mean, it was our first public showing, but it was actually a private birthday party that we were booked for. And it was in February 79, I believe. That was our first ever gig.
Right. Now, how was Brum seen at that particular time? And was reggae happening in 78/79?
Oh, of course, yeah. Reggae had been happening since the late 60s. And, yeah, of course, Birmingham had already produced a very well-known band called Steel Pulse.
Yeah, sure.
Very successful in the late 70s with their first album, Handsworth Revolution.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was a big reggae band in Birmingham already. But, yeah, I mean, we were surrounded by reggae anyway. The area that we lived and grew up in was a high immigrant area, so we heard Jamaican pop music even before it was reggae, when it was ska, you know. And then when it became reggae in the late 60s, that just became the music that we loved and all listened to and heard everywhere we went, you know, every youth club, every bar, every nightclub, every coffee bar, you know, everywhere you went, you heard reggae on the streets.
Yeah. Now, who would have been your inspiration? I mean, you mentioned Steel Pulse there, but what about for you, Robin Campbell, and you thought to yourself, that's why I want to be in the music industry. Who were your inspirations at that time in your teens?
Well, I think there were many, many inspirations. I grew up surrounded by music. It was never an odd thing for me to want to be a musician. We talked about it from when we were kids, about forming our own band. But I think when reggae happened, we had decided we wanted to be a reggae band. And then we went to see Bob Marley in 1976.
Yeah.
And I think that was the deciding factor. That was the catalyst, really, for the band.
Yeah.
I think most of the guys in the band were in the audience for that show when Marley came to Birmingham. And, I said to my kid brother, you know, if you're ever serious about doing it, I'm in, because that's what I want to do.
Yeah. And where was he playing? Was it the Town Hall, or where was he at?
No, it was the Birmingham Odeon.
Right. Okay, so the cinema. Yeah, fine.
Yeah, that was the sort of live venue at the time in Birmingham.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, the big arenas. There wasn't an NEC or anything like that.
No.
But the Birmingham Odeon was the place to play.
Yeah. Incredible, isn't it, for youngsters growing up today? If you turn round and said, that's where you saw Bob Marley, or the way the 60s package tours, you know, when people would say, well, I went and saw the Beatles in the 60s, and they were playing at the ABC or the Gaumont. Kids wouldn't understand that today in terms of the fact that the go-to venue was a movie theatre.
Well, the big sort of, you know, megadomes didn't exist, did they?
No, they didn't.
Days. And an Odeon cinema type of venue would hold maybe 3,000 people. So, you know, that was a big gig in those days.
Sure, yeah. Favourite song by Bob Marley?
Oh, I haven't got one. I've got hundreds.
Yeah. I think Exodus and is wonderful, and Could You Be Loved.
Could You Be Loved, for definite, is one.
Yeah, certainly. I had Aston Barrett Jr. on a few weeks ago talking about the Wailers. So we were catching up, you know, with his dad being in the Wailers. And that was a great discussion, because they're going out and doing some gigs as the Wailers. And really good to see them out and about.
Yeah, I know they're on tour at the moment, yeah.
Sure. Now, when you did that debut album, Signing Off, you couldn't have dreamt, could you, that you'd have 71 weeks on the charts?
No. Well, I'm sure we dreamt it.
Of course. And
I don't think we expected it for a minute. You know, no. Like, the success we had was very quick, you know, and it's lasted an incredible time. And we were serious about it. We took it very seriously. We saw it as a career, and we expected some longevity, you know, but no one expects 40-odd years, you know.
No. Yeah. I mean, in 83, of course, the Labour of Love album not only made number one in the UK, but it was huge in America, Robin, which was sort of spreading the reggae world around at the time, and into South America too. But it was difficult for a lot of people to break through into America. I mean, clearly in the 60s, you'd had the British invasion with the Beatles and the Stones and the Kinks and Herman's Hermits and people like that. But 80s were a little bit more difficult. Yes, some artists broke through. I know Paul Young had success, as did Culture Club. But that was great for you, wasn't it? I mean, Labour of Love was massive in America.
Yeah, it took a while. Actually, the Red Red Wine, which was the... went number one. That took 5 years longer than everywhere else. I think it went number one in 20-odd countries around the world. But it didn't happen in America for 5 years. So it was kind of an accident. It was, I mean, we were still doing well in America, and we had a great following. We could go tour there and sell out, you know, big venues. But we didn't have any record success until, I think, 88. Was the first time we had a hit record, and of course it was Red Red Wine, and it went to number one, so that was massive for us.
Yeah. Now, South America's interesting in that I know when I've talked to a lot of artists who've come into the studio and we've looked at their tour dates, and you see the tours, particularly rock bands, which are massive, you know, when you look at Chile and Peru and Argentina and Brazil, but you've done very well in South America.
Oh, yeah. I mean, South America is another place that loves its reggae. So, it's, you know, it was a place that was open to us. And we travelled extensively throughout South America. We even did it in our own plane in the 90s, you know. So, it was, a very successful place for us.
Yeah. Now, you toured with a few people as well along the way. I mean, the early days, I think you went out with the Pretenders, didn't you?
The very first tour we ever did was with the Pretenders in the UK. That was what broke us in the UK. And we released a single while we were on that tour with Chrissy.
Yeah.
And when we finished the tour, we were in the top, I think we were number four in the charts.
Yeah, so. Fabulous stuff. A great, great band, Pretenders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lovely people. And a lovely lady. Obviously, we've kept in touch with Chrissy over the years.
Sure.
We recorded with her and had some success as well with I Got You Babe and Breakfast in Bed. So
sure,
we've kept in touch over the years.
Yeah. Now, how did you come to decide to record Can't Help Falling in Love, which turned out to be such a massive record for you? But I'm often interested, Robin, how artists decide on particular songs they're going to release.
Well, the other covers that we've done over the years have been ones that we have chosen, and generally they're covers of reggae hits that we knew as kids.
Yeah.
But Can't Help Falling was one we were actually asked to record for a movie that was using Elvis tunes as its soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked us if we would do a version of Can't Help Falling in Love, which we did. And then it didn't get used in the film.
Oh, no. how weird is that when you got a number one record on your hands? Absolutely. That is strange.
Well, it wasn't released, you know. It just didn't, for some reason, they chose someone else's version, which had no success at all.
Yes.
And as sat on the shelves for months, and then we got a phone call from America saying that there was another movie being made, and... a Sharon Stone movie, and could they use the tune? They very much wanted to put it into their soundtrack, and so it got put in that film. But it made no difference to it, because when we released it, it was before the film, and again, it went number one everywhere. So it was a bad choice, really, on the part of the production team that made the first movie, I reckon.
Certainly. Now, about the tour, it's already underway, got started last week. May the 4th, you were in Brighton. How did that go?
Brilliant. And we've just done Blackpool and Manchester as well. So, we're getting together now. It's been a while, but it's nice to be back on the road again, really.
Sure. That was at the Brighton Centre, presumably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the Brighton Centre very well, Robin. I actually got an MBA and I was inducted at that centre. So I remember my management degree that I got. It sounds very flash, but was done at the Brighton Centre. So I've got fond memories of it.
Great stuff.
So tell me about the new album, Robin, with the delightful name. You'll have to pronounce it for me. Is it Bagger Rhythm?
That's the one. Bigger Bagger Rhythm, yeah. It was, it's kind of, it's based on, it's, or it's a sequel to the album that we did in the 80s called Bagger Rhythm, which was, it was using our backing tracks, but other artists.
Okay.
They were all Birmingham artists on the original Bagger Rhythm album.
Yeah.
But this one is much more international, and we've invited artists that we've met and worked with over the years, and when we've travelled, people we met in India, New Zealand, America, Jamaica, obviously. So it's a much more international thing, and that's why we called it Bigger Bagger Rhythm, obviously.
Lovely. And you've brought in Matt Doyle on vocals.
Yeah, well, we did have Duncan for 12 years, and my other brother, Duncan, and he suffered a stroke.
Oh, dear.
And he decided to retire for, obviously, health reasons and to concentrate on his recovery, really.
And how's that going? Is it making progress?
Matt, he's doing brilliantly. He's been so well received by the fans.
Yes.
Been shocked, really, at how well he's been received. We've only done three of shows of the tour.
Yes.
And he's sounding brilliant, and he's really grown in confidence.
Fabulous stuff.
Obviously, he was worried about how the audience were going to react to him as well, but they've taken to him so well.
Sure, yeah.
So good that he's now feeling really good about the whole thing, you know.
Yeah. And hopefully your brother Duncan is recovering, is he?
Of course, yeah. He's physically in great shape. He just didn't want to let the fans down, didn't want to let the band down.
No.
Decided, you know, that it was best for him to concentrate on his recovery. So that's what he's doing, you know.
Okay, we'll give him our best.
You know, that's something we totally supported.
Absolutely. Well, give him our very best, won't you? And hope everything goes well. So tell us about the new single, You Don't Call Me Anymore. Sounds great to me on the radio. I'm going to play it in a moment, but from the album. Tell me about the single, how it came about, and, when was it written?
Well, that's... course features Matt Doyle as the vocalist.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how we're sounding at the moment, because the music is by UB40 and the vocalist is Matt Doyle, who was then, when we recorded it, the lead vocalist with the band Kyoko, who are a band that we worked with, you know, previous to lockdown. We did over 40 shows with them around the UK and Europe.
Sure.
As support with us. And when Duncan decided to retire, he was the first person I went to. I'd always kept Matt in mind because we worked so much together, and we'd recorded this track during lockdown. And I just, when Duncan decided he was stepping back, I just thought, okay, Matt's the guy to go to. And so, because we already had the sound, we already knew how good he sounded with us, you know, because of this recording. And because this recording was on the Bigger Bagger Rhythm album, it had already introduced our audience to Matt. So he was the perfect choice, really.
Fabulous. Well, we're going to play the brand new single. Good luck with the tour, Robin. Thanks very much for coming on. So from the brand new album with the delightful title of A Bigger Bagger Rhythm, we're going to play You Don't Call Me Anymore, or You Don't Call Anymore. These are the great UB40, and it's super to speak to you, Robin, as we play the brand new single.
Pleasure, Jeff. Thanks.
Give you all my time. talking new. I guess the rumors are true. No, you don't call anymore.
I guess I was there to pass the time till someone better caught your eye. A little beating to my pride, like a credit card that's been declined. Yeah. And who knew when you called drunk at night, I'd be your perfect alibi lady. Look how you played me.
So what makes you think that you can treat me the way you do, the way that you do? 'Cause you don't call anymore, 'cause I'm still thinking about you. Have you found somebody new? I guess the rumors are true, 'cause you don't call anymore. And I'm still thinking about why I fell for all of your lies. Yeah, you had me and I can't deny. No, you don't call anymore. You don't call anymore. More. No. So come on, girl, why you gonna waste my time? You got someone else in mind. Come on now, don't lie. I know you're feeling my vibe. This ain't no game that I'm playing. Oi, oi, oi. 'Cause I'm a wanted man. Yeah, I'm a slick dress, smooth talking ladies man. Guess you can't handle that, 'cause you never call me back. No, you don't call anymore, 'cause I'm still thinking about you. Have you found somebody new? I guess the rumors are true, 'cause you don't call anymore. And I'm still thinking about why I fell for all of your lies. Yeah, you hurt me and I can't deny. No, you don't call
LiveWire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.